It's lovely.
It's the Two Johnnies Podcast.
The Two Johnnies Podcast.
Two Johnnies recording a podcast.
Hello, hello, hello.
You're welcome to the Two Johnnies Podcast, bringing you all the mayhem and news from the world of the Two Johnnies.
I'm Johnny B.
And I am Johnny Smacks. Lads, it's a special podcast, number 20, and where else would we record it but Two Johnnies HQ in the beautiful Kerr, County Tipperary. On this week's podcast, we are interviewing champion jockey and all-round sound lad, Davy Russell. Our very first interview, lads, on the Two Johnnies Podcast.
Yeah. Drum roll.
Drum first roll, yeah, we'll take that. It's the first of many.
Yeah. So. Before we ruin Davy's life, Noel will be here with the news. If you don't know Noel, he's a GAA fundamentalist. He could be from any town in Ireland.
He's from everywhere. He's like Johnny Cash. He's been everywhere, lads.
He's been everywhere. He's old school and he's here with the news.
Producer Mara will be grilling us with her mystery topic once again.
And we will be revealing our biggest fears in our adult life. And also what terrified us as children.
And it wouldn't be a Two Johnnies Podcast without being rounded off by our yurts and dirts of the week.
Yurt and dirt.
Before commencing with proceedings, matters arising from last week's podcast, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. A fan of our podcast in London. Legend, he's always snapping us in under the name of Foggy. I don't know his real name and I don't want to know his real name.
No, he should just remain as Foggy.
He's Foggy to us. He snaps in to say, he come out with some crazy shit. I'm back in the office tomorrow and I'll have it on for the tans. They fucking hate me when I have it on. So a special shout out to everybody in Foggy's office. He's trolling his office co-workers with our podcast and a bit of rebel music. So, bye, Foggy.
He's a gas man. It's a pity we couldn't do that in his accent, because his accent is outrageously funny as well.
Yeah, so. He's about as PC as a kick in the bollocks, not that far.
We got a nice snap from a gentleman in Dublin saying, lads, just got onto a Dublin bus and the bus driver was laughing. And I said to him, he was the first happy bus driver I'd seen in a while. He turned around and asked if I knew who the Two Johnnies were. I said, yeah. And he said, I'm just after listening to Noah's news on the podcast.
While driving a Dublin bus.
There you go.
So it'd be a massacre.
So if a Dublin...
fucking massacre in the streets of Dublin.
If a Dublin bus goes through the front window of Arnott's or something, you know what happened.
He'll be gone fairly wrong if he goes through the window of Arnott's. And also a lovely review from Hatchet Healy, who says he's not a big podcast listener. He said, I'm not a mad podcast listener. Well, he could be mad.
Yeah, he's mad anyway.
And a podcast listener with a name like that. So thanks for your very positive review, Hatchet Healy. And another man who jumped in to me all the way from Wales. I can't do it.
Is that a Welsh accent? Oh, my God.
I'm from Wales, man.
I'm not going back to the building, say not. There you go.
Okay. Welsh by the name of Sam said, speaking of accents, he has picked up our accent from listening to so many episodes of the podcast in a hurry. So there is a lad, he said he's about 16 or 17 and he's in school in Wales. And when he talks like, I can't do it, give me a sec, I'll do a Welsh accent. The valleys. Anyway, he puts lad at the end of his sentence. So he's going around the valleys, lad.
My God, we're polluting people's minds. Also, Patrick tweeted us, hey, at Johnny B Tip, at Johnny Smacks, how's the preparation for at Miss Maura Faye's 5-minute comedy show that was spoken about in podcast 6. Hashtag just a reminder. Hashtag Two Johnny's Pod. So yeah, Maura, what's the story?
Yeah, Maura.
I am going to do it. I've been in touch with a comedy club and I'm waiting to hear back from them. So it will happen and it'll happen before the end of the summer. But I just mightn't tell you about it. I might tell you after the fact.
You've contacted a comedy place. You know, we tour with a comedy show. You can just open up for one of, what the fuck.
Mara's never going to open up for you, Johnny.
No.
That's a fact.
Oh, God. Oh,
wait, this is gas that you're going to do a comedy club. You know, me and Smacks, we've never done a comedy club.
Yeah, what's that about?
We skipped that stage.
We skipped it because we had a bit of a stir off the internet. We just started doing our own shows and we only ever do our own show. Mm. We've never done an open mic. We've never supported anybody.
Cool. So when I die on my, you know, arson stage, you can jump up and be like, Grand Morris, down there. So here's some real professionals.
We won't be claiming to be that.
Why, who else is going to be there?
Didn't know Tommy Tiernan was going to be there. So don't forget, if you want to get in touch with the Two Johnnies Podcast with your comments or suggestions for topics, just use the hashtag Two Johnnies Pod. That's the digit 2 Johnnies Pod on social media or messages on Snapchat or Instagram, where our usernames are Johnny B Tipman and Johnny Smacks.
Yeah.
You can't go wrong. Okay, weekly roundup. What's been going on in Two Johnny's Land this week?
Well, a little confession. We're recording this podcast slightly ahead of schedule because at this minute, if you're listening to this when it's uploaded on Monday afternoon, we're in America.
We're in San Francisco.
America, lad. We couldn't... I mean, what do you want me to do? Bring the laptop?
We can't load up the suitcase with the mics and all, lads. Because we won't get through customs.
That's a fact.
And that's a fact.
So we're doing a little bit early. We had a massive week. Releasing the single, announcing our first ever live podcast show. Music video went up. It's pure scandalous and hilarious and kind of like beautiful.
Beautiful as well. We've done multiple media appearances and interviews. We've done two live shows in San Francisco. By the time you're listening to this, we'll have done them anyway. And we'll have attended a GAA match. So fitting in or recording a podcast around all of that, lads, was very problematic. So to quote Unbelievables, we said we'd have a clear run today, so we did dinner this morning at 8:30.
Yeah, and there if you're knocking around the west coast of America, come down to San Diego. We're doing a gig.
Give us a shout on Instagram and Snapchat, and we'll hit you up. We're only looking for people to hang out with.
Yeah.
You know? We're only looking for someone to lead us astray, so get in touch. But we just want to say thank you to everybody who downloaded Summer Tune on iTunes. Your pure sound. We don't know yet how it's gone.
Yeah.
But it may or may not be number one. We're going to hope it's number one. Who knows? Topic number one. By the time you're listening to this podcast, we will have been on a 12-hour flight from Dublin to San Francisco. And I've been freaking out about how I'm going to cope, considering the last time I was on a plane, it didn't go too well. With that in mind, we thought we'd discuss what our biggest fears and anxieties are in life. And what were the things that terrified us as children? I'm struggling to read, lads. Fear of reading, I think, at this point.
Just to refresh people's memory, the last time we were on a flight back from the UAE, Smacks collapsed, needed medical attention down the back of the plane. They had an oxygen tent or mask the whole lot on him.
Yeah, and you were just standing there staring at me blankly as I considered what my last words would be.
I was trying to get a good shot.
You all right, lad? You all right, lad? No, Johnny, there's an oxygen mask attached to my face. I can't breathe. I'm sweating from every orifice in my body. You all right, lad?
Do you want an orange juice?
Do you want an orange juice? So I get you water or something. It's like, I'm fucking dying.
But you want me to... So I'll open a window for you.
Yeah. So that was... I genuinely thought I was going to die that time. But I'm sure we'll get into that at some point.
Look, this is the biggest fears. This is you. Time for you to come out of your shell now. You've been wanting
to
do
this.
Okay, so
I'll start you off with an easy one. I have a fear of walking into a pub first.
Okay, Amar, so when we go places, Johnny, of course, gets up on stage. He's a stand-up comedian, a presenter, a singer. No problem in front of people, but he hates... I always go into the pub first. It's not a big deal. We don't talk about it anymore. Just as we get to the door of the pub, I know to go first.
Okay, you have to explain. If you were to walk into the pub first, what are you afraid would happen?
People turn around and start looking at me. No, genuinely. This is a legitimate fear.
This is from a man now who's been on several national television several times.
Yeah, I do this for a living, but like, I never have and never will walk in to a pub first. And I mean, I would genuinely ring my friends and be like, where are you? And they'd be like, oh, we're in such and such. And I'd be like, yeah, come out there and meet me. Just don't really want in me on. Like. And if I'm with a group of lads, I let them walk in. I'll just waddle in after them, kind of.
But I find this weird because
it's a paranoia with me, yeah. And my friends will tell you, in Ross Grey, I've been always nervous, like, so I'd be ordering a drink and I'd be, like, cracking my knuckles and stuff. Don't know what it is. But is that anxiety?
It's some sort of social anxiety.
Yeah, maybe so. But after two pints, I'd cartwheel.
Yeah, you know I'm going to make you go into a pub first when we're over in America, so.
I mean, no one know me over there.
Johnny, you lived, when you were young, across the road from a pub.
Yeah. Oi, pubs aren't a problem. Like, it's just, I don't know what it is. It's that whole, you know, seriously though, when you push open the door of a pub and everyone just goes.
That happens in every pub in Ireland when you go in, and especially if you're not from the place, you get properly stared at. It's like, who's the stranger?
Yeah. So you can imagine if people look at you and they're kind of like, I know him from somewhere. Then it's even worse.
Yeah, but we get that everywhere. People are like, are you in Fair City or what do you do? Like,
yeah, I got stopped at the Topaz in Cashel there. They were like, hey, Rory Stories. I was like, what the fuck? I don't look nothing like Rory. Rory, if you're listening, like, you know, that's not an insult or anything. You're 6'6". I'm not.
So, Rory's got giant's blood in him, lad.
Yeah, man, he's an animal.
He's technically a giant.
Yeah. But that is one of my legitimate fears. I guess
it is. It's not a legitimate fear. It's a fear. What else other fears do you have?
Jeez, have you no fears? No. Getting found out. is a legitimate fear.
I'm on to you.
Yeah, you know.
What do you be doing?
No, honestly, like, I enjoy this so much. Like, you know, the two Johnnies and everything that's came with it. And I've got to give up my old job and stuff like that. But, like, there's an awful cloud hanging over me that someday someone's going to realize, you know, that lad actually isn't that good.
Every performer has that, though. Every performer, every artist.
I think I'm just going to wake up someday and, like, they'll be ringing me just saying, yeah, you're back in Superfly there, starting at 9:30.
Bruce Springsteen went through depression for years over that. So don't worry about that one. That one's grand.
I wouldn't say I'm depressed, but, like, you know, I just worry that that I'll be found out someday. But maybe I'm fucking class and I'm just underselling myself here. But
yeah, that's a bit weird.
I don't know. Yeah, so like a year ago, I was serving chops and dealing with customers asking for 4 cent off. 4 cent, I kid you not. And now, like, here we are in America, heading for America for the third time. Again, touring, doing shows. So, like, I guess it's just surreal. And at times I'm like, wow, I can't believe this is happening. So, but they'll never find me out.
Yeah, but all the gigs we get, it's not like we have a manager who's kicking down doors for us.
Yeah,
we book all the gigs ourselves, like, so.
Yeah, we've got there ourselves, yeah, such. So, yeah, that's probably a legitimate fear. You know, fear of failure. There's one.
Yeah?
Yeah. I think that's what drives us.
Yeah.
As two Johnnies. It's
The man who we interview in the second part of the show, very successful in his own field, said you can't be motivated by fear of failure because it restricts you. Stops you from... If you were afraid of putting the ball wide, you'd never take a shot.
Yeah.
That's true. That's true. So, fear of failure is probably one. What fears have you got, Johnny? I've got two more, but I feel like I've got to let you speak.
I can't be the only vulnerable person.
And for anybody listening, I'm not lying on a couch here, you know, with Johnny and Mara behind me, and I'm just talking through my fears. I'm not.
My biggest fear. Snakes.
Snakes, lad.
Yeah.
Of the human variety or actual snakes?
No, actual snakes, lad. They're too fast.
I never knew this.
If there was a snake on the other side of that room and he wanted to bite you, there'd be nothing you could do.
Tricking.
Snakes are lightning fast. Huh? I was over in Australia and there was this, some sort of a zoo, and your man comes out with a snake around him and he's like, do you want to rub the snake? I said, are you fucking crazy? What do you mean you want to rub the snake? Snake would eat me, like. You can have a pet snake. Give him half a chance. He'll swallow you whole.
That's a python.
What's a python?
The python is the variety snake that would...
It's still a snake?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, but...
Snakes are so much more dangerous than humans. If snakes wanted to conquer the world, I don't think we could stop them. Only for they've no arms, they'd have us bit.
So that's your fear. What else?
They can't be trusted. Imagine having a snake around your neck. It's like juggling with a shotgun.
I've done that at the circus loads of times.
They're absolutely, like, amazing to feel. You can't tar snakes with all the same brush, okay? So, okay, there's rattlesnakes and there's certain types of snakes, which are scary. But there's other, like, corn snakes and other ones that are lovely pets and people like having them. I don't know why people have them as pets because I think they should be...
I know where this stems from. The animals of farting wood, lad.
Oh, yeah.
That snake fucked you up as a young lad.
Yeah.
So what's the problem? There you go. There, we found out why Johnny B is a fear of snakes. The animal's God. A farting wood lad.
I was telling you, he's the most evil bastard
the snake.
To ever be on television.
He's a wicked bad
joke. There was a lad in Game of Thrones who cut the main character's Mickey off. He wouldn't be a patch on the snake in Farden Woods. That snake in Farden Woods is the greatest prick.
That's a fact. What about beer fear?
You get over that.
I don't know, man. I went into the deli the other day and your mom was looking at me. She's like, good night. And instantly I just turned white. I was like, was I talking to you last night? Was I? She's like, oh, I met you inside. I was like, oh yeah, grand. I mean, beer fear can cripple some people. This is a serious fear. For me, I kind of don't really care, but I mean, I would get fear now when I wake up and I see I've done the t-shirt trick.
What's that?
Which is when I get sick. I kind of take off my t-shirt and strategically place it over the sick. So if I wake up and look down the side of the bed and there's a perfect t-shirt there, you know, laid out, I'm like, oh no. which was the makings of a 3-in-1 under it.
Lad, you're not going to hear that on Off the Ball.
No.
You know the thing about getting sick.
So that's a legitimate fear. Also, like we touched on it before, the fear of the unknown.
Gosh, you're an awful man for this.
I don't like the first time we went to America, we went to New York, and like we'd no idea what the accommodation was like we were going to be staying in. And like they dropped us off at his house, and I just went completely quiet, just mute. Like Johnny opened the front door, and I kind of went in, and I was like, still not really talking, and I was just quiet for like an hour. Because I don't know, like, I don't like knowing, not knowing what the house is like, what's it going to be like, will we be okay here? So I suppose just travelling in general.
Yeah, but sure, it'll be grand.
Yeah, but that's you, lad. If the house was on fire, it should be grand, sure. Get another house. Do you know, like, that's this man's attitude. What are you going to do about it? There's nothing we can do. Nothing we can do. Like, yeah, oh my God, so. I guess I'm the worrier in this relationship. So fear of the unknown is definitely one. Now, possibly my biggest fear.
What?
Birds.
Oh yeah, okay.
Women or birds?
Mara, don't
they
be,
scare
don't
me.
Be silly.
They
don't
scare
be,
me too.
Don't be foolish.
In a whole different way. No, chickens. Genuinely. Chickens particularly. Freaky fuckers. And this stems back to, in the old days, they used to use a turkey's wing as a duster. So I used to live with my nanny when I was young, lad.
Back in 1842.
And she used to have a turkey's wing. And like, no, she never used it. It was just kind of kept in the scullery of the house. And it was so scary, and I didn't like the feel of it. Ratting. So that used to freak me out. So that grew into like being afraid of all forms of birds. Now, I went to college in Waterford. Jeez, I couldn't go down the square in Waterford sometimes. Infested with pigeons. Fuckers flying everywhere. Absolutely freak me out. And I used to love the crepes. You get no chocolate crepe down there.
Yeah.
But jeez, I couldn't risk it with the pigeons. Not. And the first time I went to meet the parents, they were all laughing. I think I've told this story possibly before, but there was a box on the table, and I was sitting down, you know, they were all sitting there, all her brothers, the whole lot, sitting around this table. Next thing they flipped, they're all laughing, and I just started laughing with them. Didn't really know what they were laughing at. Flipped the lid of the box, big fucking chicken flew over. They knew I was afraid of birds. Jesus, I was over in the corner, cowering, by in shaking. I was shaking and everything. I fucking hate birds. And with John Creedon in KR1 day, we were doing his TV show. It'll be out later in the summer. And of course, where did Johnny B bring me? Down to the river. We'll feed the ducks. Fucking ducks pecking around. The camera live on me. I shaking like a leaf. John Creedon didn't know what was going on with me.
Big goose pecking at your loaf of bread.
Big goose chasing me around the place. So okay. That's my...
That's yours. My second fear, right? Nettles. Pricks. Nettles, right? What are they good for? Nothing.
Nothing.
What are nettles good for? Nothing. When I was a young lad, I was probably stung by nettles 100 times. You think you get over it. You never get over it.
You never forget nettles.
Never forget nettles. If there was a bar of gold down the end of the path, and there was nettles on that path, I'd have to live off the gold.
Go away if there was a fiver down there, you go down for it.
Lad, if you're in shorts and there's nettles, that's terrifying.
Class. So nettles, any reason why? Particularly, were you ever really badly stung? Like, I've heard of lads who fell into a proper big yoke of nettles. Did that ever happen to you?
Stop, I won't sleep tonight.
Nettle soup, lad, that's what you want.
My grandmother used to make nettle soup all the time.
Go away. Yeah. Is it nice?
Oh, I never had it. She was tough, now.
So, I mean, I'm going to touch on my second last fear, which is the fear of getting old. And I'm not talking wrinkles. So I watched 24 Hours in A&E recently, and there was this old man in there in hospital, you know, and he was after taking a fall. Lads, I cried for 2 hours.
Oh.
The show was over, I was still crying for an hour. He was so alone.
Do you know, I'm glad we don't live together anymore.
He was just like, and I always just think, like, I'd hate to be alone at that age, getting old. So that is a legitimate fear for me. You don't anyway, Johnny. You're 72 already, like, so.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we just have different approaches to life.
That's why it works. And my last fear, debt. Don't mean to freak you out. That is the only thing that really, really scares me.
But you'd be dead, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Jesus, lads, you're sadists, do we? What am I living with? What am I working with here at all? Genuinely, fear of like dark. I'll wake up in the middle of the night sometimes and be freaking out.
Why?
Thinking like, oh my god, someday I'm going to be dead. I've been watching a film in the cinema and thinking, oh my god, everybody in here is going to die one of these days.
Yeah, well,
because I'm sweating thinking about
death is the only certainty in life, so you might as well accept
death and
it.
Tax.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or like, you know, you could just not pay a tax, and you know.
That is a legitimate fear for me. You, Johnny? So you wouldn't give a shit?
No, it'd be grand.
Be grand, yeah. Be grand. Have you got any more fears?
No, but I try to be a bit more practical. Like, what can you do about something? So if we broke down on the side of the road, I think you'd be the fella punching the steering wheel while I'd be getting out trying to see what the story is like.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. You'd be ringing the AA. I'd be like killing a badger on the side of the road.
We do not condone badger killing. I read a book by Irish businessman Bill Cullen, and he said when he was young, times were tough. A lot of stressful things happened in that house. Barely afford to put food on the table, that kind of thing. And his grandmother used to say to him, if Bill was getting really upset, come on, we go feed the ducks. And she'd say, what can you do about it? What are you going to do about it? And he'd say, there's nothing I can do about it. If worrying was any good, we'd all be doing it.
Now you said it, Johnny. That's I tell you, I'm feeling good already. Oh. Have you ever been in a near-death experience or anything like that?
Well, I was in a car crash. We were coming home from Foss when I was doing my apprenticeship, and actually we were coming home the back road, bit of sun in the eyes. I wasn't driving now, but the car went through a wall anyway, and my mate Baz was in the back, and we were given a girl that lived home. She was coming home from college, lovely looking girl. When the car went through the wall, didn't she grab Baz by the leg and squeeze? He said it was the best car crash he was ever in. Other times, yeah, I cut my hand pretty badly on the bandsaw. My family are hurley makers, and I nearly cut my index finger on my left hand off 2 years ago. 2 years ago, tomorrow.
I remember that.
Do you?
Yeah, we had a hurley match. You couldn't play the hurley match.
That's right, I missed the Ballaloobie game.
Yeah, so I kind of remember you.
Yeah, so I nearly cut my hand off on the saw, and I was afraid that I'd never play guitar again. Mm. And I like playing guitar.
You're good at playing guitar.
And making the peace sign.
Yeah.
You know?
There you go, simple things. But you made it through.
I did, and now I have a cool scar.
Cool kick-ass scar, yeah. I don't know, the scariest situation I've ever been in was definitely that flight home from Abu Dhabi, which we just touched on earlier.
Really?
Oh man, I really thought that was it. Oh my god, I'm going to die mid-air.
From what, like?
I don't know, sure, I didn't know what was happening to me. Do you know what I mean?
When you passed out, it was fair funny.
It wasn't it.
Because you were still strapped into your seat, but you were after fainting. So the air host was like, excuse me, sir. Excuse me, sir. And Smax is just, you're like, you're having a seizure. Excuse me, sir. I was like, hey, lads, you may get him down the back. Lay him out or something.
It was fair funny. Like, they were putting the oxygen mask on me and they were saying to Johnny, What's his name? And Johnny's like, Smax. And they were like, sorry, what? Smax. I just call him Johnny, that's it. So there I was, boy, staring wide-eyed at Johnny, just thinking, hello darkness, my old friend. You got a fucking door in your neck. That's all I was thinking about. I was like, this is it. Gone now, on a flight.
Four Indian lads patting you down the
wall.
Yeah,
yeah, it was crazy, like, you know. I was like, he kept, like, sipping me the water. I felt like saying, just pour it all over me. I'm roasting, man.
Oh, God.
But yeah, that was probably scary. That or my first migraine. I suffer with migraine wicked. And if anybody's actually listening to this podcast who has a cure for migraine, will you let me know? I get it really bad. It's like having a stroke. I get numbness in my left arm, vision goes in my left eye. It's literally, and the first time I got it, I was like, oh my god, I'm dying. And I am a hypochondriac at the best times anyway, so that definitely didn't help. But I mean, dealing with it, how do you deal with it, Johnny? I'm probably going to take your approach and just be practical and build a bridge and get over it.
That's it. Don't worry about it. I wouldn't worry about anything really now. I'm too busy to be worried, lad. I had a day off last weekend, and I'd say it was my first day off in weeks. I haven't time to be worrying.
Did you have any irrational fears as a young lad? As a young bye?
Well, bees and wasps, no.
Yeah, I was afraid of my aunt. Mad hair. Real curly hair. He's just freaked me out. Mother said she'd come over to the house, I'd be gone in behind the couch. Wouldn't come out until she was gone.
If you're old enough to remember that, then you should know better.
I'm not afraid of women anymore, though. Yeah. Oh! Oi, oi.
It's so funny you say that, because I would say I only have one fear, and that is turnips.
What?
Because when I was younger, right, I was down at my granny's house, and I don't like turnips, and my aunt made me eat turnips, and I was like, I don't like turnips, Auntie Catherine. She's like, eat them, like pure Miss Trunchbull, like, and I like started vomiting the turnips back into my mouth, and she's like, stop doing that. Oh, so like, even if I smell turnips now, I get, that brings me right back. I get really traumatized, and actually it gives me great social anxiety if I go to a carvery and I can smell the turnips. That's just, I'm not able to deal with it. Or like, if somebody was to order turnips with me at the same table and I could smell them, I'd be like, sorry, no, you can't.
Jeez, I was going to eat turnip salad for 2 weeks in America.
You will not.
Lads, there are fears. We've been oversharing probably this week. I mean, we've already talked about puke around 5 times in the opening topic here.
Sorry about this. The second half of the show will be quite sophisticated.
It'll be quite sophisticated. All right, lads, that's our fears. Hope you enjoyed them. Of course, don't forget to get in touch with us on social media using the hashtag 2JohnnysPod, Instagram or Snapchat. We want to know your fears. The crazier, the better. We give away a prize, right, for the best fear. There we go. All right, lads, that time of the week. Relax. Put down the drill. This is no joke. He needs no introduction at this stage. He's the man who hurled senior for 19 years. He likes to drive it. It's Noel Furlong, and it's time for Noel's News.
Noel's News! It's Noel's News!
I'm young for that.
All right, Noel, how are you?
Unreal.
Here to grace us again this week.
When are you going to start paying me?
We're looking into it, Noel. We're looking into that.
Yeah.
We're in negotiations at this moment.
Cash I want, by dollars.
And how's your aunt? Is she still sick?
Oh, yeah. You nosing into my personal business again, were you?
I just heard about it down the town.
Yeah. I know where you'd be down the town. And they don't be talking about my aunt. Now, sit down. And wished. Okay. Seeing as you fancy yourself as a singer, here's another man who thinks he's a singer. My first story of the week. American singer Akon. He's naming a city and a currency after himself.
My God.
Have you heard this?
Yeah, he's gone a coin.
I'll do the news here. Now, I use the term singer fairly loose. I mean, he's no Mick Flavin. So, Akon had a famous song called Smack That. I thought you'd like that. Now, I looked it up on the Google. And it's not about hurling. In fact, the video is only young ones with big arses and a con going around acting the Mickey. So, I was hoping for a few clips of Declan Ryan or Christy Ring. Smack that. Drive it. He's from Missouri, brought in America, but he have family ties to Senegal, blown Africa. Now, in fairness to a con, he's involved in a few charities. And he's trying to help young lads get an education so that they don't end up rappers. Now, his latest project, he went to see that Marvel movie, Black Panther. Have you seen this?
No.
Maureen?
I'm not into really the Marvel film. Sorry, Noel.
Very good. So, now, I heard about Akon and I went to see it. Black Panther. Not a single animal to be seen. I thought it was going to be like The Jungle Book. Did you see The Jungle Book?
I did, yeah, years ago.
Fuck, it's right good. There's a bear singing a song. A fucking bear. Chase is right good now. I enjoyed it very much now. I have a cat who can sing The Men Behind the Wire. Now, in fairness to that bear, he's a good man to sing. Good fucking right good. That film is right good. Now, he wants to build a city like the one in the film, Akon does. And the one in the film now is pure flash. And I hate to break it to Akon, but Senegal ain't. Senegal, bit of a dive, okay? It's nice, but parts of it are fairly rough in the city. You know what I mean? It's no Killarney. So he wants to start a cryptocurrency. That's online money that you pass around. But I don't know about that. It's not very strange to me.
Yeah? Why?
Well, I have an Uncle Donald that used to say, what you don't have in your hand, you don't have. Well, he was from Cork. So, you know, I understand that. But he's going to build this city and he wants all the lads in the city using this Akon cryptocurrency. And when he was asked about the detail, he said, I come up with the concepts and I let the geeks figure it out. Did you fucking ever? Right, I have a great idea. Carlo should win the All-Ireland. I let you sort out the details. Now go, I'm just ideas man. So, how do you pronounce his name?
Akon.
Akon. He was gifted 2,000 acres of land from the Senegalese government. Isn't that nice?
That's nice. Just speak.
President gave him 2,000 acres. And he only had to marry four of the president's daughters in return. So he said it's going to be a short drive from the capital city, Dakar. And it'll be the first city where cryptocurrency is at the centre of life. Which will be a nice change from the rest of Africa, where not dying of hunger is at the centre of life. And that's a fact. Okay, another place, cat at hurling, is Japan. For my second gripe of the week, we're off to Japan. The Japanese lads, they're going farming wearing suits.
Oh, God.
God is right. Okay. There's a company abroad in Japan, and they're making this new line of suits. They're light, waterproof, and they're easy to wash. So they want all the blue-collar lads doing the work in suits. But I didn't really understand that. I had to Google that term. Because to me, the only boys wearing blue collars are the guards. And they are to be avoided at all costs. As my grandmother used to say, the only good guard was a mud guard. I'll tell you, it was never a guard set foot in her house, in that home place. She, my grandmother Teasy now, a formidable woman. A formidable woman. She would like DJ Carey with a shotgun. She'd knock the eye out of a bird flying. Any man came in that wasn't welcome, she'd fucking blind him. So, but these suits are for lads doing manual work now. Man's work. Not like each you Larry's. Farting around the town, holding hands. Like you're fucking French. So, the story is, there isn't enough lads going doing the dirty work in Japan. They had a big earthquake there. They got a bad old knockout with the earthquake and there's plenty of work going. But the Japanese are an educated bunch of lads, unlike you two. So, they all want handy office jobs and they don't want to be going around in the dirty boots and the high-vis vest and all that doing the dirty jobs. So, this company say, this is specifically for man's work. If you go into a big building and there'd be a lad mopping the floor, he going to be wearing a suit. That's a fact.
That's a fact.
If you go into a building site and there's a lad, you know, driving a digger, he going to be wearing a suit. A lad mixing up a bucket of skim coat, plastering the wall, wearing a suit. Next thing, to be inside in Dalton's piggery. Huh? Wearing a bit of channel number 5. Huh? Now,
Chanel and all.
Channel. So, it's funny because 1978 was the last time I wore a suit. Carmel Stonewall refused to come down the chapel unless I took off the cap. So normally I'd only stand down the back of mass with the brothers And Father Jim, he'd be fairly raw of a Sunday morning himself. He'd be lucky to be able to see the choir in the second row. Never mind who had a cap on down the back. So the J-Pan lads, they want more young farmers. And I couldn't agree more.
Good stuff.
More young farmers. So there is one young man, a model farmer, Kyoto Saito. We'll go with that. He's Japan's best dressed farmer. And he goes around the farm with a suit and tie on all the time. Now, Kyoto, right, that's grand for him. He does tillage. He don't be lifting calves into the back of a transport box. 6 in the morning job. That's grand tipping on in a combine harvester, picking up bits of rice. You want to come down to fucking belly legging at me when it's been raining for 2 weeks? Start herd testing. See how long that suit lasts. See how fucking smart he looks. Be a brave man wearing a shaft around the PTO, wearing a tie around the PTO shaft. Fucking chin will end up in the neighbour's field. Now, that's no joke. So, paying for suits. Fucking price of machinery nowadays. I actually had to borrow a bit of machinery recently. I got into Pat Peters' trailer when I was going for gravel last week. And fucking one of the guards stopped me. And he said to me, you know, I hadn't a proper license for towing a trailer now. And he said to me, Noel, new I for Williams trailer there. And I said, no, it's belonged to Pat Peters. So off I went and didn't wait to hear any more about it. So I'm going to ask you to put up a photo of the Japanese farmer in the suit up on your...
Yeah, that's no problem.
Your face pop. Or...
We'll throw it up in the social media and all.
Yeah, good man. Now, local news. Big story. I was robbed.
Oh my
no.
God.
What happened, Noel?
I was fucking robbed of a win in the Junior B first round. That prick of a ref, Hennessy, was reffing it. And you know that little Torag, he hates our club. We were missing 5 of the 6 forwards now. 5 of the 6 forwards were going to a festival. Oh. A fucking festival. And a twaddle listung Varna. Do you know what it's called? Body and soul. They were going to. Well, I said, lads, if you're not down that field Sunday morning, I'll kick the fucking body and soul out of you. Gone off sleeping in a tent. Like you're fucking Ming Flanagan or something. Huh? 20 lads sleep deprived, getting the ears blown off them in the middle of a mucky field. It reminds me of my time in the Christian Brothers. Now, they knew how to bait a fella. I tell you, wouldn't be late for training when Brother Francis was doing it. Huh? Fuck it, they were great training sessions, boy. They were great training sessions. There'd be hair and skin flying. There'd be 7 or 8 hurleys broke every session. And that was just Brother Francis. I'll tell you one thing, though. We were the best fourth-class team ever to come out of that school. And any young lads nowadays, you're too soft. You have it too soft. You don't understand hard training at all. Too much television.
Yeah, yeah.
Fucking staring into phones. And television. I was in with the neighbours the other night. I was in with the wires. And what was the young lad watching?
What?
Game of Thrones. Did you ever see this?
Yeah, no, I've actually never watched it.
You're as well off. Fucking scared after it. Game of Thrones now, not to be confused with the Sunday game. Right? There was a lad in it going at his own sister. One of the main characters. Now, she's a fine cut of a woman, don't get me wrong. There's no excuse for it though.
Jesus.
So, going on fucking listening to DJ Khaled and Arson. So, the only telly I'd watch now, apart from the Sunday game, would be Nationwide. Mary Kennedy. A real woman. Now, she have curves like a small bottle of Guinness. So, the match was on in Clunine. And he had a match. An awful field. I'd swear they let sheep in there during the week. I talked to the groundsman and he flat out swore to me they don't. But I know a sheep field when I see one. And Clunine is a sheep field. Not a happy hunting ground.
No.
For us, Johnny. So, fucking Hennessy absolutely roared us. Anyway, prize pony absolutely roared us now. 49 frees he gave against us. That's what I counted. Well, Dermot was on the books. I wasn't doing the counting now. He was keeping tally. With 3 minutes to go, Rovers 3 points up. And you know their selector, Ollie Darcy. He passed me with a smirk on his face. He looks at me and says, "I suppose you forgot to drive it and all, did you?" I fucking laid him out like a raw turf. And linesman said to me, "Jez Noel, what was that about?" I said, "That's going back 40 years now, Jim." Hennessy the ref, he looked over and he saw the look in my eyes. He saw the look in my face. And he said, "I saw nothing." And he ran the other way. So we're going to have to win, I'd say, every game from now on. And hoping that we can meet Rovers in the final.
Brilliant.
Bastards.
Do you think he'll do it?
I am in no doubt about it. There can't be another ref that much of a prick left in the county. So, into the car after the game, I was travelling with young Dwyer. What did he have on? Fucking me man DJ Khaled again. Blowing the ears off me. Well, he, that man, should be tied to a cow and scuttered to death. DJ Khaled. And then he going on bragging then on the interweb and all the things he does. People forget what that man did. People forget what that man did. DJ Khaled blown the fucking ears off me. People forget about that man. Things he used to get up to. He have a dark past, that man. People don't know, but I know. DJ Khaled caused Chernobyl. Bad man.
Oh no.
So you might think about that before you go fucking downloading his music. Look, I must go, eh?
Have you something to be doing?
I am dropping Carmel to the hospital. Yeah, she's getting the cataracts done.
Go away.
She's gone as blind as a fucking ref. Woman is gone as blind as a ref. She's putting salt into me tea and mixing everything up. She's gone blind out.
Jeez.
So now when she's watching Fair City, I'd have to tell her who comes on.
Alright.
Tell her who's who. She's gone blind.
Brilliant.
I'll go away and bait the traffic, lads.
Hey, are you okay to come to America for next week's podcast?
Well, I rang Melania.
Did you?
Yeah.
Well.
And there was an interesting phone call, say the least, now I'll tell you. She's going to have a word with the other lad and see what we can do.
Grand. We hope to get you out there now.
I'm not overly enthusiastic about going. I'm going to be straight with you.
We'll give you a couple of pounds.
Okay, man. Cash. Dollars.
Dollars. You'll be there. Okay.
I'll be there.
Good man.
Maureen, look after that fella, will you?
And Mammy, don't worry.
He's not able to find the hurling field and he's going to America.
Noel, we'll see you soon. See you next week.
Good luck.
All right, it's time for Maura's mystery topic. We genuinely have no idea what our producer Maura has in store for us. And now that we are pressuring her into doing a live stand-up comedy gig, she'll be definitely throwing us under the bus. Maura, what's your mystery topic this week? Lay it on us.
So my mystery topic this week is wedding speeches. Basically, I want to start a campaign encouraging women to give speeches at wedding, because I don't think it's a thing that women are encouraged to do. So I want you to get behind me. It kind of occurred to me after I seen a tweet by a girl called Sarah, who said, "My pal was a bridesmaid at a lovely wedding tonight and started her speech with First, I want to say to all the groomsmen, all look stunning today. I don't know why it felt so empowering, but it was. So if I was to synopsize the speeches at all the weddings I would, I've been at, it would be that the father of the bride says something very sentimental about the bride. The best man tells the bride and bridesmaid they look lovely and then proceeds to do a 10-minute roast of the groom. And suddenly it's time for the wedding band and no acknowledgement that it's the bride who's probably put the most effort into organizing the day. So I want to know, what's your take on wedding speeches and would you be encouraging women to have their say, and what are the things that you can and can't say in a wedding speech?
Can I just ask you specifically, you're saying women, but who in particular should make the speech? I mean, the head bridesmaid?
Yeah, maid of honour. I did that at my sister's wedding.
So you're saying the maid of honour should make a speech?
Yes. If the best man's going to make a speech, surely the maid of honour. We live in an age of equality, lads.
That is equality. That is fair. My issue is, the dinner's long enough as it is, like.
Yeah.
There's pints to be drank, dancing to be done.
I've been at a good few weddings where the bride has spoke.
Mm.
You know, she's thanked everyone and blah, blah, blah.
But sorry.
But there's only so much thanking to be fucking
done.
Yeah,
there's too much thanking going on.
Oh, thanks to the priest. He said the mass. It's his fucking job. Thanks to the hotel. Still their job.
We're getting paid.
Yeah, you know. I definitely see where you're coming from. Maid of honour, maybe so. Each to their own, but the bride, I think, should say something, probably. Like, as you said, to be fair, it's her that does a lot of it.
Like, you know,
your man probably organises the suits.
Yeah. It is fierce head wrecking when you hear it at every wedding. I just want to say to the bridesmaids, you look fierce well today.
But
and it's so patronising. It's like,
Jesus, if the fella didn't say that, there'd be a load of young ones crying in the bathroom. He never told me I look nice.
You look well today, because normally you look rough out.
It is. Now, the problem with this topic is, though, is that you can roast the groom, you can't roast the bride, you know.
But that's equality.
Yeah, but when I was giving my speech at my sister's wedding, I couldn't tell a few funny stories about her that I wanted to say. And there was nothing bad, but it was like, she would have killed me, so.
Well, that's equality. If you're like, I've been best man making speeches before. And you do roast the groom, but you know where to draw the line.
Mm.
Yeah, you don't be telling them about the hookers you shagged in Prague or anything like that.
Yeah, that's for the stag.
Well, I tell you the two funny stories I wanted to tell about my sister and didn't.
Go on.
Oh, this is revenge therapy.
Oh, I didn't tell him at her wedding. I'm going to tell him on a number one podcast.
Sorry. Sorry, Claire.
You don't care about this topic. You just want to roast your sister.
Go on, we want to hear him.
Okay, so Claire is... No, they're nothing bad, but Claire is an extremely intelligent person, but she has a habit of saying very ditzy things. So one time we were in a supermarket and we're doing the weekly shop for my mother, so we're picking up a bunch of groceries and we're going through the vegetable section and Claire picks up this vegetable and she looks at it and she looks at the sign. It was an unusual looking vegetable and she looks at the label on it and she goes, "Oh, it's a yam. I don't know much about yams, but I know poor people ask for them." She thought it was yams for the poor, not ams for the poor. So yeah.
You couldn't tell that at the wedding. That's not that bad.
Yeah. Oh no, she would have killed me because I tell everybody that story. But then there's another one as well that another ditzy thing that she said. So the first time she did her driving test, she failed it and she wouldn't say, she was pure tick, she wouldn't say why she failed the wedding test. Driving test. And I finally got, I said, "Claire, what happened on your driving test? Why did you fail?" And she goes, "I drove through a red light."
Oh my God.
No, and it was like, how did you drive through a red light on your in your driving exam? And she goes, "I thought I'd make it."
Those are great stories.
Yeah, but no, she'd kill me if I said. But now she will properly kill me.
The last time I was best man, I told stories a lot worse than that, like.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I've never been best man because I don't think any of my friends are stable enough to have a wedding.
Yeah.
But I don't think I could be trusted with it. I genuinely don't.
No.
I think I'd overstepped the mark. Although if you haven't, Johnny, because you're more...
Yeah.
Racy.
Yeah. Saucy, I was going to say.
Okay, you've done a wedding speech before. And I think the reason that women don't do them is because they're not really encouraged to do them. So what would your tips be on giving a wedding speech? Well, how would you...
Okay, well, actually, this, I wasn't the best man, but the best man didn't feel like making a speech, so I made a speech, which is weird, but it was great crack. women, if you want to make a speech, if you have something good to say, say it. Because there's often cases where the bride's father is kind of supposed to speak. But if he doesn't feel like saying anything.
Yeah, one of the brothers or someone gets something.
Yeah, because I've been at weddings before where the father of the bride stood up and was like, look, I'm supposed to make a speech, but I don't like making speeches. I'm very proud of her. Great day. Enjoy yourselves. That's fine. Yeah. So, you know, I've been, okay, be organized. I was at a wedding and the best man was rambling like.
Yeah.
He told a speech. I don't want to give it away now, but telling big stories that go nowhere.
Yeah.
Oh, and you were there. Remember? Hey, and this guy was there.
Oh man, that's awkward.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd be saying run it by someone. Run your speech by someone.
Keep it snappy.
Keep it snappy and run it by someone before you actually deliver it on the day. Because in your head it might be hilarious. But there's probably 220 people who don't see the funny side of it sitting down there for a dinner.
So. I'd like to see the women get up and try something different. Maybe do a little rap.
Yeah. I like something different. I helped Jerry Garman. He done a rap. So he done a rap to the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. And I just helped him rhyme it up a bit and use my expertise. Although Jerry delivered it beautifully. And it was great crack. But it was something different, you know. So
you could have a lot of head bridesmaids who are probably well used to public speaking. They could be, you know, CEOs or teachers or whatever. So no harm using a little PowerPoint presentation. Load of embarrassing photos of the bride. But to come back to the point, Maura, is the bride going to sit there and enjoy the roast, or is she going to make a scene?
Yeah, or is she quite happy to just have everyone looking at her?
Ooh.
Like, nobody's whiter than white. We've all done stupid shit. So yeah. the groom gets a good
We're
ribbon.
We're all doing fucked up shit.
The groom gets a good ribbon. I like a Hollywood roast. He's got to sit there and take it.
Yeah.
I think maybe my sister just wanted the wedding speeches quite short. So what we did was that her husband was going to make a speech, but he was really nervous about it. So what they did is they had the speeches before the meal. So like, if it's like, Maura, if you're making a speech, less than 3 minutes and that's it. So I didn't really want to get into telling. I had a couple of people. I wanted to say a couple of things about Claire, and I wanted to say a couple of things about the family and stuff like that.
You had to thank the hotel staff and Yeah.
Well, I had to.
My mam did a speech at her wedding.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. She stood up and spoke like she's never spoke before. Literally, she changed her voice. The woman talks like in a proper Ross Gray accent, like. And then she stood up the day of her wedding and was like, I'd just like to thank the hotel staff. They were absolutely fabulous with us. I was like, who is that woman and what have you done with my mother? So my mam, yeah, did a speech. She thanked me for...
For what?
For just being me. For not ruining the wedding. No, I'm joking. Yeah, I was 12 at the time.
Aww.
So I was a groomsman. Yeah, it was impossible to get. Like, I had to wear an adult suit. There was no page by suit fitting me at 12, I can tell you that. But my man made a speech. So, like, women do. I've heard brides normally do. It's kind of becoming more common. Yeah. I've never been at a wedding now where the chief bridesmaid or maid of honour has made one. But
yeah, I do like your idea, though, of doing something a bit more creative, because in general, wedding speeches are feckin' boring.
The only good thing about a wedding speech, Maura, is everybody's taking bets at the table. If you're any bit of crack.
Oh yeah, the thank yous.
Yeah, and it's normally thank yous or start to finish the time. But the thank yous is good if you have the swivel table. So every time they say thank you, you move the glass of money on one. So thank you, moving on, whoever it lands on at the end gets to keep the money. But what normally happens is you get to keep the money and then
you have to go buy a round.
You go and buy a round and you're actually a fiver down. So, you know, I'd be making a rule at the start. Listen, whoever gets it now keeps it, right?
I was at a wedding where the best man knew the thank you game was going on. And he saw it out of the corner of his eye. And just before he sat down, thank you, 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 thank you.
There's the key.
I ruined the game.
That all right, so, Maura?
Yep.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that mystery topic.
Do it, girls, if you want to do it. If you don't want to do it, don't do it.
Step up, girls. Step out. Don't forget to rate, review, and tell your friends about the Two Johnnies podcast. And for God's sake, subscribe. You'll get the lovely little push notification.
Subscribe, will you?
And we'll all be happier. And don't forget, you can contact us on social media using the hashtag 2JohnnysPod. That's the digit 2JohnnysPod.
And don't forget about the live podcast. Live.
Get your tickets. Ticketmaster, lads. That's the only place to get them. Bye. 2Johnnies. The Sugar Club. Okay, this segment of the podcast is coming from Yall, County Cork, where we have been joined by one of their favourite sons. 3-time champion jockey, English Grand National winner, and someone who has given us many great nights out. Full-time mad bastard, champion jockey, Mr. Davy Russell has joined us on the podcast. Davy, you're very welcome.
How are you, lads? Glad to be here.
I tell you, we're delighted to be here with you.
Yeah.
In the presence of greatness.
Davey, tell us, how are you?
Very good. Very good, yeah.
Relaxing down here in tropical y'all.
Yeah.
It's lovely here.
Oh,
we're only saying that coming in.
Best place God made.
God made y'all. Yeah.
Cork as a whole or y'all?
Well, it's God's county really, like, isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, what is it about Cork people, Davey?
Oh, should we love ourselves, don't we, really? Like.
See, I couldn't say that now.
Yeah, oh no, we do, and we kind of know it, but some people admit it and others don't.
Brilliant, brilliant. So we're going to start anyway, Davey, by asking you, why horse racing? Like, what got you into it in the first place? I mean,
from the moment I can remember, I was obsessed with horses. Looking at them, reading about them, and obviously Dad had a few horses, broodmares, nothing, a couple of race horses on the farm, but even before that, I didn't even know what they were. I was obsessed with horses. Like, I remember this, distinctly remember Santa didn't bring me anything to do with horses. So I kind of cried for about, you know, a day. And next thing, Santa had actually dropped something in the yard on the way down out of the sleigh. A book about caring for horses.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know, he must have dropped it, you know, as he was coming across. And mam said that she found it. Oh, look, Santa dropped it up there. So, and was happy out.
What age was that?
Oh, it's 19, 20, 21.
I thought you were going to say Santa dropped the horse. You're going to say, geez, we broke up. wouldn't be much use to you. But I mean, growing up and going to school and all that, no interest. Yeah, like, how was school?
I wanted to ride my pony to school.
I often
thought of it, I swear to God. And look, my father just wouldn't leave me. But I actually wanted to ride my pony to school. I used to actually ride my pony before I went to school. Just get up early enough to ride him, and when I come back in the evening time, and same, and we'd horses, everything. Yeah, it was just, and I couldn't sit still. If PE wasn't on, or if we weren't hurling training in school, I didn't really want to be there.
What were you like in the classroom?
Very bad.
Yeah?
Oh, Jesus Christ, that was a nightmare. I actually was up to the school this year, and a couple of teachers that taught me are still there, and they just said, you know, they were actually coming out in a cold sweat to see me coming in.
Oh no, he's back.
Yeah.
The pony's tied up outside again.
Yeah. But not in a bad way. Like, it was all in jest, what I thought was funny anyway, and I was trying to be funny. Like,
they were having a nervous breakdown.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
did you take Anton from school then, really? Or?
I did not, to be fair. When I got to about 24 or 5.
You were hardly still in school then.
No. Time to go then. When I got to 24 or 5, I kind of thought I should have stayed in school a little bit longer. Because, I would say, when you're 16 or 17 or 14 or 15, you don't realise that how the bigger world works, like, yeah. You know, outside of the little bubble you're in, there is kind of, you know, there's figures and things that need to be sorted out. And
wait, did you finish school?
No.
Didn't bother with leaving?
No, I got to fifth year and the principal kind of said, just David hasn't enough interest really, and it might be easiest on all of us if he didn't come back. And I was hooping and hollering in the background, and Mam was saying, no, you're finishing your school. And yeah. Luckily enough, I got into Kildalton, into an ag college down in Kilkenny. And I'd done a year there. And I used to go to Aidan O'Brien's in the morning before college and write out two lots. And we used to get £3.60 a lot. I'll never forget it.
Man, how old are you, like?
They were all finished here. They had done their leaving cert and everything, and I hadn't. So okay. I was actually really young. I was only 16.
Yeah.
I was the youngest in the college, would say, at the time.
Starting from scratch.
And around what age did you start competing then in horse racing?
I got my license when I was 16. I had one ride, we'll say. It was just a horse that we had here at home that I used to ride out before in the morning time and in the evening time, we'll say, as whatever. And she ran once and no good. Then the next year I had, kind of a couple of rides, and I was riding out in different stables. And if one guy had a horse, you'd go and ride him in the evening time for him. And actually had a job here in town working in the fish factory, deboning salmon.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
Lovely.
So in the morning I used to go to Connor to ride out, come back at lunchtime, go to sleep for a couple of hours, and go down to Bowen and Salmon for the evening. And then I got a couple of rides, you know, things were going well, and they were just rides. And once I was riding horses, I didn't care, like, I just, you go to the races. And
it wasn't about winning?
Not at all, it was just about getting rides, just actually riding, being a jockey, like, well, what I thought you were being a jockey, like, you know, is go to the races. And this is only just on a Sunday, you know, so it was every Sunday during the winter, go to the races, have one ride. If you had two, you were kind of, you know, bit of an operator, and if you were three, you were just absolutely, you know,
you're on fire altogether.
Yeah.
And like was there a certain point you reached where you got to and you were like, jeez, I could like make a serious living out of this, make a right go of it, like, rather than just the Sundays?
No, that
never occurred, really.
No, like, just wanted to ride horses, and then I wanted to ride winners, and I rode one winner. I actually rode my first winner, and it was kind of by, well, say not mistake, but it was luck to get it. And so I rode it, and I rode a winner every Sunday after that till the end of the season, and I ended up novice champion that year. And then the season, and then through the summer, then I caught a couple of more rides on the race course when the point of points were off, and I rode, tipped away riding winners there, and got going there. And then just the point of points season started up, and it looked like that I was, you know, and then I challenged for the senior title that year, and then after that it was just.
Yeah, when did it become about, let's start winning, big time?
To be honest, I tell you now, the year before I won the novice championship, there's an awards at the end of the season, and it is the best crack of all time. I mean, it is the best night of the year. And I can remember watching the guys getting awards that night and saying, that's what I want. I was kind of 18, I'd say, because I was 19 when I was novice champion. So I was 18, and I was saying, that's what I want. And then I won it the next year, and then it was just, I had to get an award every year after that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Then it became serious. And then people started talking that, you know, you're going to be champion, you know, or you're going to fight it out and blah, 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 blah. So,
and what would be your mentality, like your view on winning? Like, do you think there is a winning mentality and that you have it? Or would you analyze it like that?
I don't analyze much, really. I just like riding horses, and I love riding good ones. And okay, I was off for 5 weeks. I had a problem with my lung, and last week, my first ride back, I tell you, I was after jumping two or three fences, and the horse wasn't going to get beaten. It was just, he was going to win, and that was it.
Nothing to do with you.
It was just absolutely unsung. And all I had to do was keep him between the ditches and get him to the other side of the fences, and that was it. Ride two rides tomorrow, and you see, one of them could fall, and you could break a bone, and you could be out for 6 months. And
yeah, you've had some serious injuries in yourself, in fairness, now.
Yeah, the injuries are, but you see, they're no consequence on anything. They have no part, make any difference to me. The injuries, I'd take them all just for that couple of seconds. That I don't know what injection of what you get when you ride a winner. Or when you feel successful. And I'm sure it's the same as, I don't know, whether it's a hurler. Do you know when you hit a ball, when you strike a ball and you know it's going between the posts?
Yeah.
And you can turn and go before the ball is where it is. You just know that feeling just for them couple of seconds. There's no one, there's nothing anybody can do to you in them couple of seconds that is going to have any effect on you. No matter what you do, like, it has no effect on you. You are invincible for them couple of seconds, for that feeling, like. And it's the same with, I don't know, with one of ye that, like, you put loads of time, people wouldn't see the effort you put in behind the scenes, but when all that comes together to click, for that second, for that click, and that's just, I think it's that feeling that we all yearn for.
You nearly take the injuries for that, like, but I mean,
oh no, you would, yeah.
And like, what's it like when you get injured? What are you like when you get injured? Are you a nightmare? Are you going around the house moping? Is what's
no,
going
I
on?
Like, I actually like to keep going. I like to keep going when I'm injured because I don't want to get too fat. Because it's harder. The heavier you get, the harder it is to get back. So the worst injury I had was when I wasn't racing and I was just getting up on a horse and he flipped over and he fell and he done real damage to my arm. And but the pain, now that was the most pain I've ever felt. But the reason I think that because mostly our injuries come during a race when your adrenaline is quite high.
Yeah.
And you don't feel the pain, and the ambulance comes and gets you and they give you a jab or something and it kind of all mellows out.
Yeah.
But this time it didn't matter what they gave me. Like, I can remember I was there and I was in incredible pain, and I saw my arm was like, we'll say it was separated. My hand was separated from my arm.
Lad.
So the arm was down, my hand was down below it here, and my arm was up, my elbow was up here. So I was there and I was saying, this is it, like, you know, this is the end of the road. And I was like, how are they going to get this yoke back together? So I was driving down, or the ambulance driver was driving down the road, and I said, Jesus, I said, will you put on the lights? He said, I said, please, I have an unbelievable pain. He said, what do you want the lights for? He says, it's not dark outside. I said, not the headlights. I said, the woo woos. I said, hurry up.
Turn on the noise.
Oh, man. And he was saying, you'll be all right, we're nearly there. I said, oh, God, please. I was just praying to get to the hospital as quick as I could so they could just stop the pain.
And when you've had winners like that and you're on top of the world, do you find it hard to come down after a race?
Not because you have to head in to Wareham and you just flip around and you go back out again, and that'll bring you down really, really quick.
And how do you concentrate? How do you turn it on again?
It,
like when Johnny Smack scores a goal, he's gone.
I'm sitting in the crowd waving.
Yeah. It's, I don't know, you just kind of adapt to it, I'd say, but I don't try not to get too high. I kind of concentrate on not getting too high, and I try and concentrate on not getting too low. So
yeah, because you're not part of a team, really, are you? You're on your own.
Yeah, there's no team. See, that's the thing. Like, you come back in and there's no one else to blame, or it's just all you. It's you and the horse. And to be honest, I tell you, the worst thing an owner wants to hear is someone blaming the horse.
Yeah.
Because you can insult a man's wife, but you don't insult his horse.
You know, but you know, even like a boxer's out there on his own, but he has a coach.
Yeah.
You have no coach.
No, I have no coach. But then you have the trainer of the horse. And that's a big thing, that if the trainer of the horse is fully committed to you and he's behind you the whole way, then that's fine. But when you get a separation between trainer and jockey and he leaves you out there on your own to be gobbled up by the wolves, then that's tough now. That's hard to take. But I'm lucky now that, you know, the likes of Gordon Elliott and really professional men are behind. And I just come in and say, look, I was wrong there. And he'd say, you were. But we'll move on.
I'm just going to play that back. That's a Cork man admitting to being wrong.
Do you ever feel pressure?
No.
Have you ever had like a trainer or an owner who like you feel, Jesus, bit of heat now on?
No.
No.
It doesn't bother me.
Yeah. Because we heard now that if you're drinking Lucozade, that's when the pressure's on.
I drink it a lot.
We got an inside tip, Davey.
Yeah. I remember there was a trainer he's known as a gambling trainer or a stable, and all this was happening. It happened unknowns to me, and he had three horses in on the same day, and the first lad won, and the second lad won, and the third lad won. But no, after the second lad won, I knew there was, you know, obviously, I don't speak to him about it, nothing, but it was the biggest gamble of all time, because he'd trebled them up in the one bet, and
he'd done three of them,
or somebody had, anyways, so it was done, and there was a lot of money got. But unknown to myself, the lads in the Wareham were watching me, and I used to smoke. I don't smoke anymore.
Yeah.
But they told me that I smoked about 15 cigarettes in the space of an hour and a half, and I didn't realise I was doing it.
Yeah, unknown to yourself.
And I wasn't telling myself that there was the third horse is the horse. I actually couldn't wait to get out and ride the third horse.
You were the third man.
Yeah, but I was on the three of them.
Oh, you were on the three of them?
I was on the three of them, yeah. So the first one went in, and I never thought it had no bearing on me. And then the second lad went in, and next thing it was kind of getting, this is going to happen. It was all down to the third horse.
Did the third one win?
Yeah. Yeah, and he was the easiest one of the three.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
The way that the horse racing is now, it just seems to all big massive emphasis on gambling. Like, yeah, nobody really cares about how it's ridden, how it's won.
I agree, and it's a pet hate of mine. And when you, like, I watched the matches at the weekend, and we had Anthony Daly and
Liam Sheedy.
Liam Sheedy.
Yeah.
whatever they say, I'm pretty confident that they've been through it and they know what it's like, you know, to hurl or manage or do whatever.
Yeah.
When you put on a race meeting, you'll have a fella from Boyle Sports and you'll have a that went racing with his father and went to Grand National and really likes racing. And then you'll have a guy from UCD and that was in the racing club and got an entrance through that. And that's it. You have no...
But like they've never actually been up on a horse. Like.
Yeah, and yeah. That's fine. And I totally understand that they have a certain knowledge of certain things of racing that I most certainly wouldn't have because you can read a lot of things. You know what I mean? You can, but the actual experience to get someone like Ted Walsh, I feel is brilliant because he's been there. And what he says, you know, you can take some bit of weight from it because he has been in that situation and he knows what he's talking about. And he will talk some bit of sense. But when you have guys that are... The reason the horse got beaten because his betting drift changed, that to me is... It makes me a little bit angry at times because that has no bearing. The horse, for one, didn't get up that morning and say... Not today, lads.
What odds am I now?
He could be like Dinky after yesterday. Just glad.
Do you want to explain to people who Dinky is?
Dinky is up to my waist. He's black and white and he has an extraordinary haircut.
He's a pony now. For anyone.
Yeah, but he's got four legs, a tail and he's got a beautiful haircut. And Dinky lost his virginity yesterday.
Yeah. Dinky the horse had a great first day out.
He's 20 years of age, so he's equivalent of you know what's that film, The 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Yeah.
So if we actually done a documentary on Dinky's life, that he was
that's what it'd be like.
Yeah.
But the size of the mare he was up on, David.
Yeah, big unit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
he won a stepladder.
Yeah, we had to build we actually had a step for him, so she was standing in a hole. And we had one guy holding her and I was holding her tail and someone else was holding Dinky. It was quite an operation. And I was
Hoisted up Dinky.
But everybody, hopefully now we're going to wait now. And I think it's 11 months time and we will have a baby Dinky running around.
Baby Dinky.
And the Dinky, was he up on her for long?
Bang, bang. Bang over the bar.
Bang over the bar.
In the back of the net.
Do you know what? That sounded good, man. You should go into the old punditry yourself.
Yeah. Bang. Would you ever give the punditry a shot now, even the horse racing punditry?
I'd be a little bit afraid that I bore people too much about horses.
What, too technical?
Yeah, no, I just like talking about horses. I don't like talking about betting. But I really do like talking about... And I there's a lot... People don't understand there's an awful lot of tactics go along with riding races.
But you don't hear that if you're watching...
No, you don't. You know, you hear about... Whatever. Nothing to do with tactics. And you wouldn't believe when tactics start... In a race, they start in the wear room before you go out.
Away then from horse racing, Davey, like another great passion of yours is GAA.
Yeah, I just wanted so badly to be able to hurl for Cork. I really did. And then I realised that, no, it's not going to happen. So I had to stop that dream. I just had to break it.
So growing up then in Cork, who were your sporting heroes?
Racing wise, it was Richard Dunwoody, Adrian Maguire, Charlie Swan. I loved them. I just loved them. But really, it was JBM.
Jimmy Barry Murphy
was the man. By Teddy McCarthy.
Yeah.
I swear to God, I thought he was kind of in around 14 foot. Because he was field ball there in the middle of the field. He's just like soar to the sky. And Teddy McCarthy.
Another positive influence on you as the wife.
Oh yeah, top class. Yeah,
we've met her. She is top class. Oh, top class. I don't know how you got her.
Boxing well above my weight there. It was actually a funny story. Now, actually, the boys they hurled for Limerick. Donal O'Grady and the younger brother and Rooster. We nicknamed him Rooster the same night. He was going around like a chicken. Another one of the lads had retired. One of the Limerick lads had retired the same night, and we were inside in the hole in the wall. Monday night at the Galway races, and I wasn't riding the next day, so we were having right old crack. And I said, come on back to the hotel, lads. I was in the hotel, and so all the boys were on the beer, they were finished for the year or whatever. And she was walking down the street with her friend, and I said to one of the boys, jeez, like, how do you get a bird like that? Like, you know, he says, I'll show you now. He says, and he went over, two boys from Drum and Inch. Now, I don't know who the two boys from Drum and Inch, but hard luck, because they looked like they were playing the job just perfect. So they were walking down the road, and next thing
with the two girls,
it was two girls, and the two boys from Drum and Inch started talking to the lads, they must have known him from, I don't know, playing under 16 or something, because no one ever came out drawing inches as far as I'm concerned. But they started chatting, and next thing the boys, I went and got the car, and when I came back, the two boys were after the Limerick lads were after swiping the birds after the two Drummond Inch lads.
Took the ball off the hole.
Yeah, I sent them on their way. Yeah, and that was the end of the story. Then yeah, she just never missed a day since. Yeah, but only for Dodge now, and the boys wouldn't have happened.
There you go. That's how it happened. So yeah. He was your wingman.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it kind of took two or three of them to convince him to get into the car now, to be honest. there was a couple of gates erected and things.
Ho, ho.
Yeah.
And how are you managing having a load of kids and still having to get up and be a top athlete in the morning?
Yeah, well, she does a lot of the work now, to be honest. And she's teaching, she's back teaching as well. So,
I mean, is it a thing in the middle of the night, the child is crying and you're kind of elbowing her going, I have a big race in the morning now.
I'm lying there and I'm going, please, I'm asleep, please. So he's kind of do this, and next thing, if there's any bit of movement, I know I'm on the ball. If there's no movement, I have to get up. I'm not too bad now. I enjoy it. They're great fun.
Just on nights out, then we can confirm, Davey is fantastic crack,
incredible fun.
But you don't drink at all.
No, I never drank.
Never.
No, well, saying that now, there was a couple of moments, but it wasn't for any reason that I didn't drink that I had a bad experience. I just had no interest. First of all, I didn't like the taste of it. And then
you haven't tried it, did you? Haven't tried it.
the right stuff. And Dad didn't drink. My dad didn't drink. So I was never really around much of it. And
but it doesn't bother you going on nights out with the likes of us?
I love it. Yeah. Once you're in the right company, there's nothing better. Yeah. And
I can imagine it's okay for the first couple of hours. But as the night goes on,
I can get better. Depends. I can just turn around and go home. You see, I have no problem.
Yeah,
you
know, yeah. The car's also tight.
Yeah. Yeah, I just turn around and go home. And if I'm not, you know, if I'm getting a bit tired or something like that. But then the worst of all is when you have someone with you that you have to bring home.
Yeah.
And he just won't come. Yeah. And the night is shocking, right? There's nothing happened. But he thinks that it is the best night that he has ever been out on. And he won't leave. And
it's 10 to 6 in coppers, yeah. And he's still convinced, he's still going.
Yeah, going. Or that he has a chance of pulling the bird. And he has no chance. And he's probably talking to a model that hates the sight of him. And I'm saying, look, come on, we're going. I'm going. And next thing.
That sounds like a night out with Johnny.
Yeah. You've no bother staying grounded.
I try. When you have three or four kids, five. Working on six or seven of them, you know.
You're going at it.
You're going for the hurling team, Davey. Yeah.
Have you run this by yourself?
I want to fill the bed. Yeah.
Cheers yourself and Dinky if you flat out.
Well, herself was a bit of an athlete as well. She
was, yeah, top class one. Yeah.
Pole vault.
Yeah.
She's still able to do it.
She won't show me.
No.
She will not show me. She actually refused it. She told me she's done 100 metres sprint as well, and I tried to race her a couple of times and she just doesn't take part. She packed that in. She also told me she can play the flute, she can do this and that, the other.
You've never seen any of it.
She won't show me. I don't know. Like,
but does that help then? Like, she'd understand you being, you know, you have to concentrate on yourself and your own prep.
Yeah, but she'd sometimes be then, get up and stop whinging, will you? Yeah. For God's sake. You know.
They're all having chips and you're eating a salad in the corner.
Yeah, yeah. Toughing up a small bit. Yeah, but she's brilliant. She's changed my diet. That's been the biggest part of it.
She'd help, would you?
Oh, she's fantastic, yeah. Yeah, she's a brilliant cook. And once my diet is good, everything else is follows suit. I think it's the weight is the biggest killer. And it plays on your mind and has a bad effect on me and things. But
Jeez, you must be one of the tallest jockeys going. Yeah.
Would you believe I was at one stage, but that's all changing now. I think that, you know, a bar of chocolate at 8 o'clock in the morning would get me to 9 that night, you know. So.
Doesn't work like
not
that.
Not really.
Has it changed much since you started? So when you started out with the pint-to-pint and stuff like that compared to now... Has it got more professional in approach?
Oh, and unbelievable, yeah. Like, we went from pint to pint for Sunday. We didn't get home till Wednesday. And that was it. Like, you just had the pub afterwards, the pint to pint dance. You went to the chipper. You woke up the next morning then and you went to another pub to watch the video of the pint to pint the day before. And then you had...
Debriefing.
Yeah. And this all just went on and kind of, you know, around about Tuesday evening, you kind of said... Let's go. I need to get back into the swing of this again. But nowadays, it's just nobody stops them back from the races anymore. Like nobody, no. The only time we stop is when we have the kids with us because they, you know, to feed them. Yeah, but it's all stopping at a garage, grabbing a sandwich or something, and going again, and getting home, and going to bed, or watching whatever they do, whatever.
Yeah,
you know, that's whereas before it was.
Yeah, wait, is a bit of the crack gone out of it then?
A little bit. Like, obviously, you probably can remember going to matches with your parents and things you know, you stopped or you brought the sandwiches with you and you stopped halfway and you done all that carrying on. And no one was ever in a rush to get home.
No.
Yeah.
But now everybody's in a rush to get home. For some reason, it's just, I don't know what it is.
We wanted to ask you, because of your love for young offenders, have they not offered you a part yet?
I just want them. All I want them to do is come to y'all on the beach. And I'll bring Dinky, I'll bring... Like, what Cork person doesn't come to y'all on their summer vacation? Like, do you know what I mean? So
I swear to God, Dinky is literally made for the young offenders. You see one of the main lads in it now.
Jock up in his back.
Yeah, up on the back of the horse. Oh.
So if the producers are listening, will you give Davey a shout?
I have all these ideas in my head. I just, you know, it'll take a day or two to get them out. But I love that programme. And then to Frank and Walters, then it's just...
Like, the song.
Oh, brilliant.
Billy Murphy.
Anybody yearn to got a melted face? If there's someone sitting alongside you, have a look there and see if they have a melted face.
But another reason, and I suppose the first time that we crossed paths was with the Hurling for Cancer, which is something you're massively involved in. And
we can't speak highly enough of this event. If anybody hasn't heard of it, Davey, tell them about Hurling for Cancer.
Yeah, it just came up that we used to, at the end of the year, again, just looking for something to have a bit of crack with the boys. So we used to go to Clare and then to Yall or Tipperary. We played in Holy Cross 1 year. And then Jim Bulger said that he wanted to organise a team to play my team. And he brought it to Newbridge then and brought it a little step higher. And but the money we raised is just unbelievable. And then...
It's up over 1 million now, is it?
Oh, it's brilliant. Yeah, and then the local people in Newbridge then obviously... facilitate us with the bars and things, and they organise a bit of music and you know, it's great crack.
It's not really supposed to be a night out, but when we go, it's a night out.
Yeah,
it's just a hurling match for other people.
Yeah, and then Copperface Jacks.
You
know, when are you going to start having it at the weekend? Come on.
The beauty of it all is that you get to hurl alongside Charlie Carter, Joe Dean, all these fellas that
Joe Dean still has it.
Oh my God.
It was mad.
Have you ever seen anything like the touch, the man, what he can do with a slitter is unreal. Like you don't appreciate it until you see it up close.
But last year I was playing and this lad, I was shepherding him out to the wing. Now you got to take into account myself and Johnny play junior A, and I had this lad right on the touchline under the stand. And thought, I have him now, and he just dinked it over the shoulder and split the posts. And I looked back at him. He took off his helmet and walked away. He'd enough done for
the day. Yeah,
DJ Carey.
Yeah.
And then I tried to do TJ Reid.
And
he was coming through the middle. I tried to do him. Laddie burst me.
Yeah, I was. I said I'll do a job, Charlie Carter. Do you know Charlie Carter's? You know, a couple of years older than me. And made a really easy to me.
What position were you playing?
I was always corner back because I was I'd never any problem with wrestling someone to the ground.
So how did you and Charlie Carter get on?
He's just too fast and you couldn't wrestle him to the ground. He's just stuck to the ground. Like he's just a unit, like, and you can't catch him and turn him and gone. Oh, jeez.
I was like, this is unreal. And Martin Story on one side and Lee Chin on the other.
Is that not the greatest song of all time?
Honest to God, what a tune. Like, and Larry O'Gorman was there, and Larry is fully convinced he still has the capabilities of 1996.
Yeah. The glasses on under the helmet.
Fantastic. Look, I get messages from people that never go to a race meeting, have never been to a race meeting, and that they're just saying that they're sufferers from it, or someone in their family suffers from it, and they just say, please keep going. Yeah. Please keep going. And and they have nothing to do with it. Right on the letters, I've nothing to do with racing. I've only heard about this event, but please, can you keep continuing? It's just marvelous,
and it's just growing every year. It's getting even, it's getting bigger and bigger. And
I think you've added another bit to it. You see, because the kids love, and the younger people, and we need the younger people to go to it and enjoy it. And then you have Micheál Maherty commentating on it.
It's unreal. There was over 3,000 people at it last year.
Yeah,
Micheál Maherty. Someone said, Micheál, who scored that one? I suppose it was whoever touched it last probably scored that. So it's on this year on Tuesday the 14th of August in Newbridge.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, St. Collins Park, yeah, around 7 o'clock, yeah.
We'll be there, amongst others. Yeah.
And I can confirm that Brian Cody is an intimidating man.
Oh, yeah.
He is an intimidating figure. Yeah. He came into the dressing room.
Yeah.
He didn't even crack a smile.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's only a bit of crack, Davey.
Yeah. He still wanted to win.
Oh, we wanted to win, yeah, but... But it's actually not a bad game of hurling. Like it's
it
actually
is good, yeah. It's a good standard. Yeah. Like
when you see like Lee Chin and Shane Dowling, turn on the bit of style.
I was in a full forward line myself, Shane Dowling and Conor McDonald.
And there you go. One of the greatest full forward lines that was ever put together.
And I have to go and play a junior B match tonight.
Right, Davey, we're going to finish up. You're going on night out, yourself, the two of us, and you can bring three people with you. Who would you bring? Anyone in the world?
Michael Collins.
So he's number one. Okay, yeah. Michael Collins.
And for those who can't see, there is a portrait of Michael Collins hanging on the wall.
And a statue.
That's a good statue.
A class statue.
A bust of Michael Collins, like he's Julius Caesar, no?
Need to get someone to pay for it. Who's I think I'd like to bring Che Guevara. I think he'd be a very interesting kind of a guy. Christy Ring.
Ah.
There's a trio now.
Yeah, Che Guevara, Michael Collins and Christy Ring.
Christy Ring.
I actually think the three of them for Cork. Yeah.
So this is just a rapid fire round, Davey. You just say whatever comes into your head. So I'll shout two answers. You can tell me which one, right? Tea or coffee?
Oh, tea.
Ryanair or Aer Lingus?
Oh, Air, Ryanair.
Football or hurling?
Hurling.
Dogs or cats?
Dogs.
Chocolate or crisps?
Chocolate.
Jimmy Buckley, Nathan Carter?
Jimmy Buckley.
Yeah, no, all day long.
Yeah.
Michael Collins or Roy Keane?
Ooh. It's a curveball. I have to be Michael Collins.
Michael Collins, okay. Ruby Walsh or David Mullins?
Ruby.
Ruby, okay. Lovely. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Top class.
First guest on
you
the
You want back out to the farm?
Yeah, I need to finish top in the field.
Why? With all your success, like, are you still farming?
Sure. I love it. Like, you know...
We've no success and I can't get him to work. You're working away.
I think you're the biggest grafters of all.
Yeah,
we've been exposed here on our own podcast.
There we go.
So like when you eventually in 50 years time retire from horse racing, you're going to be a farmer?
Yeah, I tip away. Yeah.
Will you go back and play Junior B?
No.
No,
it
definitely
wouldn't be
not
safe enough for anybody. Me or anybody else.
Just watch out if you're playing the hurling for cancer or this cornerback will wrestle you to the ground.
See, I actually dream at night of going out, jumping up, fielding a ball, turning and bang over the bar. I actually dream of doing that, but I can't.
We'll make sure it happens this year, yeah, Davey. We'll make sure it happens.
One more. Any advice for your younger self, Davey?
Get your weight organised when you're 16 and just enjoy it. Enjoy the good days. Like really enjoy the good days.
Yeah.
Because there's loads of bad ones.
There you go. We'll leave it with that.
That was deep, man. That was deep,
yeah. Davey, thank you. An absolute legend.
We'll go have a look at Dinky the Pony again.
Yeah, come on.
And we did.
Dinky the Pony was a fair yoke to go. Jizzy dropped the anchor, lad, I tell ya.
It was like a sledgehammer.
Huh? He's got an education, didn't you?
Oh, I'll tell you one thing, I almost thought I was going to see a live mating or something there, but Dinky's a fair yoke to go. And Davey said he'll keep in touch, you know, and he'll let us know when Dinky's offspring arrives. Might go down for a live video.
And check out the coverage of Davey's suit from Ascot.
Yeah.
He goes full top and tails. He looks unreal.
He's a class act and great crack. We've had some great nights out with him and... top man Davey for doing that. First of many guests here on the Two Johnnies podcast.
So we can't go without the yurt and dirt.
Yurt or dirts of the week. Johnny B, give us your highlight and lowlight of the week.
My highlight of the week comes from Onpost, the National Post Service of Ireland. And we received a letter in the letterbox, funnily enough, during the week that was addressed to the Two Johnnies, County Tipperary. That was it.
Fair enough. You know, yeah, I have to credit on post on that.
And it was from East Cork. Different county and all.
Oh.
Different sorting office. So that letter would have had to go from Cork to the sorting office in Portlaoise. And then from Portlaoise central office down to Care here. And then the local man dropped it in my door.
Class X.
You know you've made it when that happens.
There you go. Fair juice on post by. Okay, so I'm going to start with my dirt.
So when we went down to record with Davy Russell, on the way back, see, he brought us out to meet all the horses. And I suffer a bit with hay fever, you know, a bit of dust or anything like that. And horses in particular drive me insane with the hay fever on the way home in the car, Mara. I had to let the other lad drive. I couldn't see. The eyes were watering, the nose was running. There was snot everywhere. Oh, it was all over the gaff. So hay fever is definitely, that was my dirt of the week that week. Johnny, what was your dirt?
Internet roaming. You go abroad and can I use the internet? No. You can, but it'll cost you a fortune. But the fellow beside me, like, he has cheap free internet. No, you can't. Different network. Networks. Will you come on?
Remember I told you I had like really cheap roaming in Abu Dhabi?
Yeah.
My phone bill for that month was €130.
What happened to you?
Don't know. Must have went over the limit.
Negative ways,
Negative ways, man. Yeah, I just paid it there the other day. Sickened. So I'm going to finish up this podcast with my yurt of the week. And my yurt of the week is actually our little pod team. 20 episodes, lads.
Oh, yeah.
20 episodes, all the hard work, all those meetings in that place in Portlaoise, Midway, that we had at the very beginning, all came to fruition. And well, here we are, 20 episodes in, number one all the time, consistently. So I think we deserve a little bit of a round of applause.
It's funny that we used to meet up planning a completely different project that will someday come to light. And then we pivoted away from that project to the podcast. So someday that project
still
will come back.
It's still in the pipeline, lads. It's still in the pipeline. But no, and
if I have to murder somebody to make that happen, I will. Yeah, just saying
We will kill someone. We'll do it, lads. And also to you, the listeners, for listening to this podcast 20 weeks in, consistently number one. We hope you enjoy it. We do our best to bring you a bit of entertainment into your lives. So thanks for listening. Yeah. And thanks, lads, for you as well. It's been great working with you. Here's another 20.
Group hug.
Aww.
Well, when we put out the first one, we were thinking, you know, let's just, if we could get top 50.
Yeah, if we could chart, it'd be great.
Yeah.
And
then when we put it up, I was looking through the charts and I went through the top 100. I was like, oh, I don't see us there. And then the next day I opened it and we were number one and we couldn't believe it.
There we go. We the best music.
We the best music. You know,
That's it for this week's pod. I've been Johnny Smacks.
I'm Johnny B.
I'm producer Maura.
Don't forget to tune in next week. We'll be coming to you from the United States of America. We're going to do the podcast live from the States, lads.
Yeah.
We don't know where yet. It could be underground with Master Splinter and the rest of the turtles. Who knows? But we'll bring it to you anyway.
So follow us on the social media and see our adventures on the West Coast, man.
We'll be back next week. Same time, same channel. Good luck.
Hang loose, man. Good luck.
Lovely.
It's the Two Johnnies Podcast.
The Two Johnnies Podcast.
Two Johnnies recording a podcast.
The Two Johnnies Podcast is a big ball, small ball production.